ever since getting engaged, you've gotten even prettier.
Maybe because you're getting it regular.
Whoa! I don't want to think about my brother's junk.
From the producer of Superbad.
Bring some bail money, because mama's going to rage.
This May.
See? Not drunk.
So you're just a terrible sober driver?
You're invited.
This wedding is going to be perfect.
I am dead serious.
Dead serious.
To a very special engagement.
What's that?
Somebody found a souvenir.
Bridesmaids.
Take it.
What?
Yep, double jointed.
Rated R. In theaters May 13th.
What's going on, guys? I'm Alex. Welcome to another episode of the BSR Show. We are the Black Series Rebels. With me, as always, is my boy, Stove and Ellis.
It's Steve. It's just a name. It's Steve.
And he just got done shitting in the street. It's Cisco Kid.
I am ready to party.
And it's happening. I'm putting it all out on the line. Our special guest this week, I'm familiar with her. Everybody here is familiar with her, but our audience isn't familiar with her. It is the lovely Sarah Amini, my wife. We're not doing Borat, though. Hi, honey.
Hello. Hi, guys.
So you're the perfect guest for this week. We are talking about, I would say probably if we went around the horn, a lot of people's favorite comedy to tune into at any given moment. Your choice for this week was the Apatow, Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph classic, Bridesmaids. We always start every episode off with the same question, which is, why Bridesmaids? Why pick it? What is it about this movie?
Oh, man. I think that this is probably the movie that I quote more than any other film. Steve, I don't know if you know this, but my sister and I refer to you as Stove from this movie all the time. You are Stove from Bridesmaids.
I'm honored.
Yes. And we always say Jordan Almond to each other. It's always like Jordan Almond. There's such details about this movie that my sister and I love. Anytime it is anywhere, on a plane, on TBS, I sit down and I watch this movie. It is so rewatchable. It is funny every single time. Not only is it hysterical, but it touches on the foundations of female friendships. And there's a lot of really great themes here about, I mean, we'll get into it later, maybe, but I just love this idea of a raunch comedy. But when you distill it down, it's about being at a different phase in your life than your friends. I think it's super relatable. And I love Kristen Wiig. I love Rose Byrne. So that's my choice.
What about you, Cisco? Do you have a memory of the first time Bridesmaids entered your life?
I know I watched it in the theater. I remember hearing a lot of good buzz about it. And you know what's funny is that watching that trailer leading into the show, it kind of bugged me out because I probably remember being hyped because of that trailer. And then a lot of that stuff isn't in the movie. A lot of those jokes, that's actually really smart, right? Because a lot of times comedies that get a lot of buzz, they waste a good amount of their jokes in the trailers. And then you watch them, you're like, oh yeah, that was funny in the trailer, whatever. It's funny now, but it's really,
or sometimes in context, not as funny.
Right.
Like, oh, yes. Without the pacing of the trailer, that joke tanks.
That's a really good point. Yeah, absolutely. And so I love that there's these really funny jokes that are basically end up being throwaways for the trailer. And, you know, something different ends up happening in the movie, which is just as funny or funnier. But yeah, I remember being just blown away by this, not really knowing what to expect going into it and just dying the entire time. Every character, I think, delivers on such a high level. This was, I think, one of my first real kind of like eye-opening moments with Melissa McCarthy, where I was like, oh, yeah, she's a thing. And I really, really love her performance in this movie. So I'm so excited to talk about it. And I'm so glad that Sarah chose it, because it's a movie that I love to watch and I haven't watched it in a really long time. So I was glad to do my rewatch today.
Nice. Steve, you're of all the people in my life.
Stove.
Yes, Stove. You're Stove for the night.
Let's please call him Stove.
All right. So Stove, you know, you're one of the people in my life. I kind of view you as, you've kind of seen, like, you see, I feel like, every comedy, like, especially like comedies like this, which are kind of like the HBO comedy that, you know, is going to like live on cable for the rest of its days. When you think about Bridesmaids, how does it stack up in the lexicon of like iconic film comedies?
Well, I think, you know, you and I were having this conversation a couple days ago in regard to the lead up of doing this pod. And, you know, yeah, I am very much a student of sort of the R-rated comedies. It's what I love. And this definitely was an era after you had sort of the old school Todd Phillips, Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn R-rated bro comedy, I guess you would call it, or frat bro comedy. And then you sort of then went into your Apatow sans, right? And I consider Bridesmaids to really be sort of the top of the mountain of that, of the Apatow sans. And, you know, there's a reason why it's his top grossing movie he's ever produced or even directed. So, yeah, no, it's up there. I've rewatched it twice this week, once at a hotel on E, and,
yeah,
and once, I started the unrated one, cause that's the one I own. And I went, no. And the regular version's currently on Peacock. If you've got that, I think I'm the only one on the planet who has it. and it's top tier. It really is. It's fire. I say this every pod that we do on one of these movies, but it really is one of those movies that's firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. And it's got your star making turn with, you know, Melissa McCarthy, like we talked about, but also it was Kristen Wiig's first leading role, and it just, you know, we'll get into all this stuff, but it's up there. It really is.
Yeah. You know, the theme for this big chunk of movies that we've been doing all summer is summer movies. And what I think Bridesmaids brings to that conversation is like the summer comedy that you're kind of excited for, but ends up kind of being like the number two box office movie from like June all the way through till August. Like it like just lives in this space of like, did you see that? Oh, I haven't seen it yet. You have to go see that. Like we can name a couple, like Something About Mary, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, The Hangover, these comedies that come out right when every like 16-year-old to 27-year-old is on summer vacation. And what are you going to do? It's super hot out. Let's go see that new comedy that everybody's talking about. And what I think Bridesmaids does, like movies like The Hangover or like Something About Mary or Old School or Anchorman, is it just, it's like unapologetically itself. And it's so authentically like a Kristen Wiig vehicle and a Melissa McCarthy kind of breakout that you end up kind of just, if you take the time and kind of dive into it, it's kind of an impossible movie to dislike. Like I would think someone was lying to me if they were like, Bridesmaids sucks. I'm like, you didn't watch it and you didn't pay attention. It's an impossible movie to have negative feelings about. So I think that this is a stellar choice for summer movies, and I'm very excited to talk about it. I mean, I kind of don't even know where to start with it. Sarah, we watched it over two nights. We kind of got, which is something to say about an Apatow movie. It's also a longer on the comedy side. They're definitely, they've got some meat to them. You got to kind of
like almost 2 hours or something.
It's like 2:30, I think.
2:30. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's long. Like, and that's kind of a trademark of these like loosely scripted Apatow comedies, although directed by Paul Feig, not Judd Apatow, but I'm sure Apatow as an executive producer had lots to say about the cut and the final product of the movie. But on our rewatch, Sarah, was what right out the gate, what stuck out to you is just something that's particularly special about this movie?
Ooh. Well, Cisco touched upon it earlier. I think as an actor, I appreciate the incredible ensemble. And as a writer, I appreciate the incredible ensemble. Mm. I mean, these women are written with such detail, and you see it in unfold in so many different ways. Not just in their dress choices. There's like the physical, like they're each wearing a very specific dress that is so tailored to their personality. But when they go into like what they're wanting the bachelorette party to be.
Hello? I just got your email. Lake House? Yeah. Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's Lillian's parents' house. We used to go there all the time in the summers and everything. And it's one of her
bachelorette in a cabin?
Oh, wait, can hold that thought. Hold on.
Hello?
Fucking Helen. Hello?
Annie, it's Rita.
Hi.
Listen, I need a trip that I can fantasize forever so that I'm able to have sex with my husband.
That's why I'm thinking Vegas.
Vegas?
Hang on.
Hey! Shut your filthy fucking mouths. I'm sorry.
Surrounded by savages.
You know what? I should probably run. My other line is ringing.
You know, I can get cocaine from my hairdresser.
So, okay, bye. Hello?
Annie.
Yeah?
I'm so excited. Helen just called. She said we can go to Vegas.
You know, just, yeah, but we have to fly there.
Okay, Annie, I know you're afraid of flying, but...
I want to see Chris Angel, but I'm scared.
Which I sort of love.
Can you just hold on for 1 second?
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
Thanks,
sure.
Hold on.
Take your time. I got... Hello?
Hey, Annie, it's Megan.
Oh, hey.
Just had some thoughts about the bachelorette party.
Okay, here we go.
Easy peasy, Vegas it is.
Helen called you, didn't she?
Yeah, she got the jump on you.
I want balls in my face.
Honestly, I think it's Vegas. Oh, I love puppets.
Balls.
And you've got Ellie Kemper saying she wants to do a Pixar theme. And then you have Wendy McClovin wanting to go to Vegas because she just wants to get the fuck away from her kids. Can I curse?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But while we're on it, can I just toss Fight Club out there?
And then Fight Club. And then, of course, Melissa McCarthy's like, Fight Club. Let's surprise her. Let's hit her a couple times, get her in a van. I mean, it is just so funny. These women work individually. They work together. I mean, and we keep talking about Melissa McCarthy, who, of course, is such a standout in this movie. But I have to give props to Rose Byrne, because Rose Byrne is not a comedian. She is coming in as a dramatic actress, and she really holds her own in this movie. And then you see it, because then she starts to do Neighbors and she starts to do all these comedic movies, because she really did. They were all improvisers except for her, and she killed it, in my opinion. She is so funny and so believable as Helen. And
I have a quick question. Was Take It to the Greek before or after this?
Get Him to the Greek was before. That's how they knew her. She had just come off of Damages.
Yeah.
With Glenn Close.
Yeah,
right. And
because she's funny in that
Sunshine,
but it's also a very small role.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So you bring up something interesting, Sarah. You talk about kind of the main ensemble, the bridesmaids in particular, the bridesmaids and the bride. But one of the things that always catches me off guard about this movie is also the supporting cast around it is like fucking stellar. And if you want to talk about a dramatic actor that kind of comes in his own right really plants himself as a pretty fun comedic force, and that's John Hamm. Cisco, how do you feel about John fucking Hamm in Bridesmaids?
So that was gonna be my like thing that I really noticed this time around. I always appreciated how funny he is in this movie for and what a scumbag he is, but man, he's got like some of the just the lines that kill me every time. Like when he comes to pick her up from after the accident and he's like,
boom, what's up, fuck buddy, call for some roadside assistance.
He's just like, come on, dingus, I got things to do. Dude, it kills me every time.
Hey, fuck buddy.
Hey, fuck buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, he's just the worst. But man, he is so funny. And you're absolutely right, Alex. I mean, just like somebody that I don't think of as a funny dude, pretty much just all dramatic parts that I recognize him from.
But he's also got the scene that sets the tone for the movie at the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, with just for sure. Telling her to basically leave.
That awkward. Well, because it's so awkward, right? And that's actually another really good scene to set the stage for what this movie is about to be, is like the awkwardness of that sex scene is just like, it's so awkward the entire time. And you can tell how like unsexy it is. And she's like just trying to make it work. And he's like oblivious. That really does set the tone for what the movie is about to be about. And then it actually isn't really about any of that kind of stuff, but it really sets the stage in a really interesting way that that just really works.
Yeah, it totally sets a tone for where she's at in her life. Mm-hmm. And by the type, the choice of man that she's sleeping with.
Right.
It's great.
Well, even more so, what I think is kind of cool, and this kind of speaks to something you mentioned earlier, Steve, which is, you know, we were really coming out of an era of bro comedy, and that scene kind of takes it and flips it a little bit, right? Like a bro-y comedy would kind of glamorize John Hamm as funny and like, oh, look at this guy. Yeah, he really wants her to leave and he's done fucking her. And it's like, they'd kind of like, it wouldn't have the finesse that it has in Bridesmaids, where we're kind of seeing Kristen Wiig's perspective, which like, she's sad, she's lonely, she's with this man that is clearly like treats her poorly, which tells us everything we know about her opinion of herself, like you said, Sarah. And it really does set the tone off perfectly. Let's talk about Kristen Wiig's character. Sarah, what about Kristen Wiig's character for you, Sarah, really makes her a kind of a really flushed out character for you?
First of all, I just have to say, it's so weird hearing you call me Sarah, because you never call me Sarah. So every time you do...
You want me to call you hun on the podcast?
No, please don't. It's just so funny. It's throwing me off. What was your question?
my question was, Sarah, when you think of Kristen Wiig's character, what is it about that character that feels so particularly fleshed out to you?
Oh, you know, it's funny because I don't think I appreciated quite Kristen Wiig's character when I first saw this movie in my 20s, because none of my friends were married at that point. So I wasn't at that stage in my life. And then as I rewatch it as I get older, I really appreciate it on so many different levels. And I appreciate her character on so many different levels, because I think that, like I said, like I touched on earlier, female friendships as we get older get incredibly complex. And we're all at different stages in our lives, and we all have different pockets of friends. We've got coworker friends, we've got our friends from back home and our high school friends, we've got, you know, like we've got our couples friends, you know, so
mommy friends, if you're at that phase. Yeah.
Depending on what, you know, stage in your life. So there's so many aspects of her that really resonates with me, because I have been the Kristen Wiig and then I've been the Maya Rudolph, you know, character.
Can confirm she has been the Maya Rudolph. Yeah, buddy.
You've pooped in the street.
Shit in the street.
That's what I was saying.
I have shit in a public place. I won't go into further detail. It's really embarrassing.
Don't.
Alex can confirm.
Can confirm.
It was not the street, but it might as well have been.
You went there. I didn't fucking throw that out. You threw it out.
I went there. I went there. I've been waiting to be on this podcast for so long. I might as well just spill it all.
By the way, I don't know if you heard, but Steve gave you a gold coin for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. All I'll say is that it rhymes with a Farns and Tobel.
Oh boy. Been begging me to come on this podcast.
In the fiction or nonfiction section?
Yeah.
Neither. It's got to be photography.
I'm just going to leave it at that. Let your imagination run wild, Stowe.
Begging me to come on the show. 18 minutes in, I shit my pants in a Barnes & Noble.
Home plumbing.
No, but I mean, seriously, we can all, I think, every woman can relate to that feeling of your friends outgrowing you. And I feel like, you know, Kristen Wiig, she was going through a really tough part of her life. You know, mm-hmm. her ex-boyfriend had left her, her bakery had closed. You know, she lives with these two wacky roommates who, you know, three people living in a pop, maybe I assume two bedroom apartment, you know, one, maybe a one bedroom apartment, you know,
one and, bath, obviously they right, share the one bathroom.
Right. Right. And you're seeing your friend like be happy and get married and move on without you. And all of her friends are successful and not you. And that is really hard. And you want to be able to hold on to what you had. Mm. And so I think that, so much of her character in this film really touches at a very deep, profound sort of level, I think, for any adult woman.
One of the things that I think is really fun about this movie is that it did a really a long overdue thing, which is, there's a really unfair societal pressure for women comedians to also maintain this level of like femininity, or I guess like I put this in quotes because it's bullshit, but it's like, just make sure that you stay pretty while you're being funny and stay beautiful while you're funny, because if you lose that, then they're not going to think. And this movie kind of like middle fingers that. Like, yeah. I remember being so kind of like floored by the shitting their pants scene, because I was like, I've seen it when dudes do it and I'm over it. But now just giving it to a cast full of like funny, diverse women, I'm like, this is so much funnier. Like watching them all sweat, like watching Melissa McCarthy sweat from fucking bad Brazilian barbecue is so much funnier than if it was Will Ferrell.
Dress so pretty, it makes my stomach hurt.
Lillian, I don't know what to say. You look... Mom. Megan, are you okay?
I think my dress was probably just tight.
Oh my God. You got food poisoning from that restaurant, didn't you?
No, I had the same thing that she had, and I feel fine.
Oh my, okay.
Oh no.
What is happening?
Nothing's happening.
Oh my God. Oh, God.
You know, I don't really care which dress we get. It doesn't matter to me. I just need to get off this white carpet.
No, okay. God. No, not the bathroom. Oh, everybody, God. Go outside. I'm serious. There's a bathroom across the street.
Much funnier, because it's like they went and they said, well, what's something that like they would let any guy in the world do on film and they wouldn't even think twice, and there'd be a whole fucking conversation about it if it was a woman. And that scene in particular was so like, it's by far the funniest shitting scene or farting scene in any movie. Like, I'd put it up against Blazing Saddles farts, funnier than that. It is funnier than the Dumb and Dumber diarrhea scene with Jeff Daniels. It is like, it is the pen ultimate shit your pants scene. And it's because they recognized, if we play this safe and we try and give in to that nonsense that probably Hollywood has been, some dumb Hollywood executive is interjecting with every fucking time a female driven comedy script is handed to them. And this one just feels so like middle fingers up and rebel girl and bikini kill. Even the music is so bikini kill about it. And I think that's why a lot of those scenes really pop. Let's get into some of the scenes. And then as we kind of break them down, we'll talk about more of the actors that pop up. Cisco, on your rewatch, you know, early in the movie, is there a moment that always sticks out to you as like, every time it's on, you can't stop laughing?
Early on, I'm trying to think of what it would be besides the food. I really like when she is like dealing with her roommates. Mm. All of that stuff with the roommates is all really funny. So it's like, but the thorough line of it is like the progression of it. because you can already tell how like miserable she is. I also really like her relationship with her mom. Maybe that, I think that's actually the one that killed me this time. And I can't remember. So I actually bought the unrated version. And so I think this was my first time watching that. I'd only ever watched the regular one. And so there's this moment where the mom is talking about his, like, her ex-husband's new wife or girlfriend or whatever. She says this line that I don't think I had ever, maybe I'd never paid attention to it before, or maybe it's only in this version that killed me. She's like, she says something like, oh yeah, she probably just greets him beaver first every time he walks in the door. Dude, I had to pause the movie. I was dying. I was laughing so hard because like she looks like such a just like a normal mom. And then she's talking about beaver first. And then you just see Kristen Wiig's face. She's just like, she wants to puke. Oh, man. Yeah, that killed me. All this stuff with I think everything that Sarah said about Kristen Wiig is really interesting because she's really doing something interesting in this movie that I appreciate a lot because she's so good physically and so good with the facial expressions. Normally that's like what she is like king at or queen at, but she kills it when she's like crushing it in everything that she does, like on SNL when she's like really funny. It's all the like physical stuff, but she tones it down so much in this movie. And then when she dials it up a little bit, it's really great. Like when they're on the plane,
yeah,
all the stuff on the plane. I think that's the I think that's the moment that it really like, that's the moment that sticks out the most in my mind. All of the stuff on the plane with her like seatmate all the way through to her getting carted off in handcuffs, man. Yeah, I love that.
Oh no. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. It appears we've run into a rough patch of weather. So
I have an announcement too. There is a colonial woman on the wing.
The woman on the wing. I saw her. There is something they're not telling us. Right.
There's a colonial woman. She was turning butter. She was turning butter on that wing. She is out there right now.
Shit.
Everyone remain calm. I'm an air marshal.
There is something they're not telling us.
Yes. I knew it. I got your back, John.
There is a woman on the wing. I saw her. There is something they're not telling us.
Let's get out. Let's open the doors and get out.
Look out your way. She is dressed in traditional colonial garb.
Say goodbye. We're going down.
Stay calm.
Get our guns down.
It's funny because that scene wasn't supposed to happen because originally we were supposed to see them go to Vegas and The Hangover just came out and was a huge success. And they had already practiced the shots and everything. Paul Feig was ready to go. And that happened. They're like, there's no way we can do Vegas better. We have to figure something out. And they just like spent a week improvising. And and I think that's one of the strongest, best
it's
scenes
my favorite
in the
movie. Scene. It's my favorite scene in the movie. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and actually, you know, they do a really good job of building up each of the characters aside from her too, right? Like you've got Ellie Kemper, and then
I'll have a glass of alcohol.
Yes. And then she's just like double seven and seven. She's like, you'll like
you'll
it.
You'll like it. It's sweet.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's all great. And then everything with Melissa McCarthy and her husband, the air marshal. That stuff is all just stellar, dude. It's so good. Every moment I die from that.
We're going to get to Melissa McCarthy because she deserves like 15 solid minutes. What about you, Steve? Early in the movie, is there any – I have the bit that I'm going to – it just makes me laugh every fucking time. But what about you, Steve? Is there something early that pops up for you?
I mean, one of my favorite lines early on is when she first goes to her mom and her mom's greeting her outside or whatever and taking her in. And she's just this whole throwaway line that comes back later on where she says, oh, the Castaway movie with Tom Hanks is on Netflix or whatever. And I don't know what it is. I die laughing every time.
Every that, time. I just got that. The Castaway.
The Castaway, yeah. I just got The Castaway on Netflix.
That's such a mom thing.
Yeah. But in terms of like Wendy McClendon Covey is one of my favorite comedic actresses. And I feel like, you know, she was on Reno 911 for years before this. And I feel like this is the movie that sort of catapulted her into being able to take on bigger roles. And like, and she still hasn't quite gotten even bigger that I hope for her to have someday. But when she's doing that bit about, you know, I'm spending all day long, I'm making dinner. And my kid, I'm like, okay, dinner's ready. And my kid's like, I don't want pizza.
I see the ceiling. I sometimes see the floor.
I don't want pizza. I don't want that. I want pizza. He's like, well, we're not having that. We're having this. And it's like, Go fuck you know what, yourself, Mom. Mom. Go fuck
yourself. She's like, he's nine. Yeah.
What about you, Sarah? Is there a scene early on that always, when it pops on, you're just like, this is just top tier?
Early on? What constitutes early on? Because my favorite scene is the plane scene also. But I'll do an earlier scene. Well, I love the introduction of Melissa McCarthy. There is at the engagement party.
And this is Dougie's sister, Megan.
Hey.
Hi.
Oh.
Hi.
My grandma's not supposed to have wine. I'll be right back.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. I'm on the mend. You know, I just got some pins in my legs. Believe it or not, pins in my legs can still do this. All right? A mate fell off a cruise ship.
Oh,
but I'm back.
Shit.
But yeah, oh shit. Yeah, oh shit. Took a hard, hard, violent fall, kind of pinballed down, hit a lot of railings, broke a lot of shit. I'm not gonna say I survived, I'm gonna say I thrived. I met a dolphin down there, and I swear to God, that dolphin looked not at me, but into my soul, into my goddamn soul, Annie, and said, I'm saving you, Megan. Not with his mouth, but he said it, I'm assuming telepathically. We had a connection that I don't even know if I can, Jesus. Hey, shut my mouth. Look at unbelievable. You must be Annie's fella. I'm Megan. It's a pleasure.
Oh, well. He's not. I'm not.
Oh, my God. No. I just remembered. Actually, I just reminded myself. Okay, so yes, the Melissa McCarthy, when she's talking about this like dolphin who saw into her soul.
Right.
And Kristen Wiig's character is just like, what is happening? But my favorite scene early on is when they're fighting for the microphone. I mean, that puts me in tears every single time.
That might
be
one of the best scenes in the movie.
It is just hysterical when Kristen Wiig's character, Annie, is doing that short and sweet, didn't rehearse it, just a little short and sweet speech. And then Helen comes out of nowhere and she's like, you're my best friend. You're my best friend. And you're like, wait, what? And anyone at that moment is Team Annie. You're like, who the fuck is this bitch who's claiming best friend? Absolutely not. I've known her since I was 5 years old. And then Kristen Wiig takes the mic, and then they just go back and forth until Rose Byrne's character starts speaking in Thai.
Thank you. One last thing. It's rare to meet someone as an adult who you really connect with, and that's you, Lil. I went to Thailand recently with my husband, Perry, and there's a beautiful saying that I learned there. Kun ben song nong kong chan, sung chan ja kat madai, mai ben chen nan. It means you are a part of me, a part that I could never live without, and I hope and I pray that I never have to. Kap kun ka. Kap kun ka. And that's it for tonight. Thank you for coming.
Really quick.
Thank you all for coming.
I just wanted to say really
dessert
quick.
Dessert wine is out. Consuelo?
Really quick. Speaking of Consuelo, Lillian and I took Spanish together in school. And so I would just like to say to you and to everyone here, gracias para vivir en la casa, en las escuelas, en el azul marcada. Tienes con vivir en las fortuas. And gracias.
And it's this whole thing where everyone's like, kum kapa, kum kapa, kum kapa. And everyone's just bowing. And then Kristen Wiig just starts speaking gibberish Spanish, which I can attest as someone who speaks Spanish, it is gibberish Spanish that she is saying.
Doesn't she go like Consuelo, Consuelo,
para vivir en la escuela, like to live in the school, and the color blue? Like it just like doesn't make any sense, and it puts me in tears every single time. And that's where you see, oh, this is where it's going. It is, you're either Team Annie or you're Team Helen. Let's like buckle up and get ready to go. It's so great.
I'm shocked no one picked my scene. I thought for sure someone was going to pick this. Underrated Bridesmaids moment. Terry Crews teaching workout in the fucking park, and they're stealing his class from behind the tree. And he's like, these fucking bitches are always trying to steal my class. And he's so fucking offended. You like, want this class? You're gonna have to pay for it. And they're like, sorry.
Yeah. $12.
I feel like that was a thing. Like, we, Amber and I were cracking up at that because I feel like that was a thing in LA, at least. For by the park, and there'd be like a couple people behind a tree, like away from the workout that was happening.
Oh, yeah. It gets me every time, and it says so much about their friendship, because that's like the first time we get Maya Rudolph and Chris. So it's like, oh, these are the type of friends that like go to the park, and the first thing they do is try to steal a $12 boot camp class and get caught. And then the best part is they're like, sorry. And they like know his name as they're running away.
Right.
It's like, wow, yeah. We've been through this every time. Like for me, Terry Crews is such a fun cameo. Not, I guess at this point, he wasn't quite the Terry Crews that we know today, but so funny. Every time it makes me laugh. Them doing sit-ups behind the tree so that every time they come up, the tree is blocking them. Oh,
and they're all talking about how like he's so scary.
Yeah. Oh, he's really working hard. He's really working as hard today. They're not even in the class. It's so funny. And then I think again, brilliant character choice. It cuts right to them in a diner and they're both eating French fries.
Yes.
Like they're just instantly like, we know so much about them. It's little things like that I think people take for granted in a comedy. Like that's what a good comedy does. And a bad comedy, which I don't need to name one here. Just like they're at a scene and now they're talking about a boy.
But they also do something in that scene with the bit with the thing on their teeth, right?
Uh-huh.
But that is a bit that in other movies will end up feeling like, they're just doing this bit. It doesn't, but it does something where it actually builds upon them and their relationship as friends.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you really have to give it to Kristen Wiig and her co-writer, Annie Mumolo, because they're both groundlings people, which groundlings is very character-based. So I think that you can really see that in this movie where every character is a real person, a real three-dimensional person that you could totally buy being in this world.
Yeah. Is Maya Rudolph also groundlings?
I think she might be.
I don't know.
I'm going to look. You want to look that up, Steve?
I was reading something about, she was in some kind of improv group. I can't remember, but she had a long career before that of singing, being in bands and stuff.
She was in The Rentals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, she's definitely, she is the daughter of
Minnie Riperton.
Oh, yeah.
Who was in a famous pop group, right?
No, she was a solo singer.
Okay, like a solo singer. I knew that
she's got that like super high voice, that loving you. That's her that's her song.
So
and apparently this is a sidetrack.
Yeah, she is from the Groundlings.
I was gonna say she's a groundling, yeah.
Sidetrack trivia. Minnie Riperton's I Lovin' You was a lullaby that was written for Maya, and at the end of the song she says Maya like four times.
Maya, Maya, Maya.
That's why you come to BSR for nothing but facts that you didn't know. I think now might be time to get into the heavyweight, the Mike Tyson of this movie. And
let's segue this for a second.
You want to segue it?
Let's segue this for a second. Let's just get into the mood. Are you ready?
Yeah, hit me with the mood.
Just open your heart. Is it really fair to feel this way inside?
Wilson Phillips. You just can't beat Wilson Phillips.
Another great scene. I mean, you just learn so much about the history of the relationship when you watch them dance and like lip sync at the end of the movie. I go, oh, those are me and my friends. It's so great.
So Melissa McCarthy I think it's going to be hard to pick favorite Melissa McCarthy moments because there are so many good ones. I have to talk about that scene at the bathroom on the plane. It when she says, "I'm radiating hot heat from her vagina."
Undercarriage.
What's the exact phrase? Is it hot?
She says,
"Feel that heat emanating
from my undercarriage." Yeah, it is one of the funniest fucking things I may have ever heard in a movie. And then when he walks away, she lifts her leg a little higher and goes, "This goes higher." Like, yeah. It's like, who is this woman? It is beyond spectacular. Sarah, do you have what are some Melissa McCarthy moments for you that just stick out?
One of the smaller moments that always makes me laugh is after this huge, the climax where Maya and Annie get into that big fight at the bridal shower, and she's just like punched the cookie and thrown, like put grass in the fondue fountain, and she's leaving. And Maya Rudolph's character goes, "Does anybody else have anything to say? Huh?" And Melissa McCarthy out of nowhere goes, "I took two puppies. I'm really sorry." And then you just cut to her with like 9 dogs in the car as she's like passing Annie by. That makes me laugh so hard every single time. Every time.
I can't get over her outfits.
Did you do the research on this?
Yes, I did. And so apparently when Melissa McCarthy read this role, she couldn't stop thinking Guy Fieri. So she told the wardrobe, says, "I need to be dressed like Guy Fieri." So that's what's with the bowling shirts and the shorts and the sneakers and the sunglasses behind her head. She's dressed like Guy Fieri, and it's fucking perfect.
And the arm brace is a perfect touch.
The arm brace is the best detail of. I think I looked over you, so I'm like,
she fell off the arm brace.
Yeah.
Fell off a boat.
Fell off a boat. Just like ping ponged down a boat and then met a dolphin in the ocean who spoke to my goddamn soul, Annie. It's so funny.
Man.
It's so great.
I actually love that. I'm gonna say two, and one is kind of cheating, so I'll say the one that I really love. It's the moment after the bridal shower, after the meltdown, and she comes to console Annie, and she has that like real heart to heart with her.
She beats
the shit out of her, but then it's also like super heartfelt too. It's like she's talking about her high school and like she's just like, "You look at me, you think this would be a real breeze in high school, but that's not the case." Yeah, they tried to blow me up. They threw firecrackers at my head. So it's like all of that. And then with them fighting, she's like, she's slapping her. She's like, "Stop hitting yourself." All that's really funny. But then my last favorite is like, again, I think it's kind of cheating, but it's the end scene, the very last scene of the movie where it's her and her husband doing their videotaping. With the sandwich,
the hoagie.
Oh my god!
She flaps it.
Oh yeah.
She says it too. It's so gross. She's just like, "Look at my little flap." Look how it flaps.
The level of commitment is unparalleled in that scene.
Amazing.
You know, an underrated joke that I had kind of forgotten about is at the very end when she says she hid a loaded gun in Doug's suitcase they're about to leave for their honeymoon. It's like, that's a fucking horrible thing. You just ruined their honeymoon.
She's just laughing maniacally.
Yeah.
Now, there's like these weird undertones that she bullies Doug, right? Like I think she's like hitting him in the background. And like, she actually is like a mean older sister to Doug. And it is so funny.
She's like, "He's my brother and I love him, but he's a fucking idiot." That whole line.
Yeah.
What about you, Steve? Is there some Melissa McCarthy moments for you?
You guys have pretty much listed all of them, but there's a line in the airport one when the leg thing in the airplane scene where she's done with the leg and John the air marshal's heading back to his chair. He's getting in the road. She's like, "John, I'm going to urinate. Why don't you grab a towel or grab a blanket?"
Yep.
We're going to need a blanket.
He's just like, nope. Oh, no. There's another really like a really subtle line that I think I might have missed prior to this rewatch, but it's during Annie's meltdown at the bridal shower. And she's just like, who would do that? Lesbian. We're all thinking it. And then Ellie Kemper's like, nope, nope. And then Melissa McCarthy's like, I was thinking it.
And I don't think she even says it. She just mouths it. And it's so funny.
Yeah.
You know who we haven't talked about yet, who's kind of an unsung hero of this movie, is Chris O'Dowd. You know, he is a real rock star in this movie. You know, it's no secret to our listeners that we all have varying opinions on various Ringer podcasts. And, you know, I'm a big picture listener. I'm a rewatchable listener. I know Cisco and Stove are as well. And they kind of talk about how, like, it's always awesome when a guy or a dude or a particular like leading man will come in and kind of take a step back and do something that Hollywood traditionally has not really asked them to do and come in and kind of be a support player. And it's when they do it right and when they do it well, it sings as much as anybody. And like, I was really blown away by how charming he is in this movie and what a great supportive role. Sarah, what about Chris O'Dowd do you think really works for you in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you said. I mean, traditionally, even if we're just strictly talking about Apatow films, I mean, you're coming off of 40-Year-Old Virgin, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Like, traditionally, women, female characters were the accessory to what all the fun and zaniness that was going on in the men's lives. So, you know, John Hamm and Chris O'Dowd, it's so refreshing and fun to see them in these smaller roles, but they really do both stand out. And I thought Chris O'Dowd was so endearing. And like you said, so charming, totally works. You can see how comfortable the Annie character is with him versus with John Hamm. I mean, the fact that she doesn't take her bra off in any sex scenes with John Hamm, but she's got her bra off and she's fully naked with Chris O'Dowd. The fact that she didn't get up early to like do her makeup before, you know, the morning after. I mean, she slept in and he woke her up. I mean, I just really love their moments.
Well, it's a great juxtaposition with the Hamm role too. Like you're saying, yeah, with the bra, but also all of a sudden she kind of turns into the John Hamm character in their relationship, yeah, in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And
he's sorry, go ahead, Sarah.
No, I was going to say, I just love, just to piggyback on Steve, I just love that moment where she makes that cake and he doesn't pick it up the first time. Because he's like, no, you can't treat people this way. I know this is how you've been treated. You know, he's got there's that great moment where he meets John Hamm and he's like, come on! And he leaves.
That cop, he's like, doesn't, that cop doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he talks funny.
That cop talks funny.
He talks funny.
He's able to be really vulnerable in a believable way. That's like,
yeah,
it's so important in the movie because she really needs that, right? Like that character needs that, like we said, the juxtaposition of him versus John Hamm and versus her too. You know, she needs someone who can like open that up in her, and him being able to be that vulnerable and be believable doing it is really, really impressive, I think. And, and he's not like a joke a minute guy, you know, like all of his jokes are really low key and subtle. And so being able to like dial it down and not be, you know, try and steal any thunder from anybody is it's impressive. He really delivers in this movie.
The only time I feel like he kind of takes the lead is the dickhead movie does at the very end with her head into the police car.
That's very funny. Where he goes, it's, oh, just
sort of, it's sort of the, yeah, one moment that he kind of, nope, I'm taking this one.
It's like, oh yeah, that's habit.
You know the scene with him that I had kind of forgotten was so funny is when Helen and Kristen Wiig's character are trying to get his attention while driving, and they're just like going fucking ham, and he's just reading the book. He's just reading his magazine, and they're like doing donuts until they finally just like gently bump him, and he's like, come on, and he like flips the whoop whoop and like gets out of the thing. He's like, dude, no, what do you want?
he's reading the paper.
What's the line?
He's trying to ignore them, and he's just like, let's see what Heathcliff is up to today. I said, oh, dude, that's pretty good.
Before we jump off of this, I want to just see, are there any, like, I mean, we didn't really talk about the bridal shower with the chocolate fountain.
That, I think, is my favorite scene of the movie. Meltdown.
The meltdown is purely, it's absolutely insane. And it comes from the trip to Paris. And she just absolutely loses her mind. I mean, is that chocolate fountain maybe the most disgusting thing you've ever seen?
It's so gross.
It's true. And what I hate about it is that it's an actual fountain that looks like it was drained.
Are we ever going to get back to like fondue and chocolate fountains? Is that ever going to be a thing post-COVID?
No, I don't think so. I think that's done.
Are buffets done? Are we done with buffets? Is that whole... Okay.
Hey, Golden Corral is still open, man. You can go. You can go if you want to.
Good to know.
Pretty sure I can figure out the statistics on who and who isn't there.
What are all the... There's a bunch of really great subtle details in that, specifically that Parisian-themed bridal
shower. Okay, well... It starts with her driving up, and they hand her the pink lemonade.
Hold on. No. It starts with the fucking butterfly flying out of the box she opens.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
The invitation. Box. Yeah, the invitation.
Yep. And it's Wes Anderson reading of the invitation.
But the thing about it is that obviously why it's so infuriating is that at the barbecue place before they try on the dresses, is this is Annie's idea on a smaller scale, and Rose Byrne's totally like, it's just kind of been done to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So we get this like kind of quirky Wes Anderson-y reading of the invitation, which is kind of a fun, like, we're going to enter Helen's world for a little bit. Like, if this was Helen's movie, this is probably the way it would play out in her mind. Like, the invitation is perfectly read. The butterfly is presented. It kind of flies around. It's this beautiful awe moment. And then I think we cut out and it like is bumping Kristen Wiig in the face. And she's like, fucking butterfly getting it out of her face. But I think Sarah and I both agree that this might be my favorite Kristen Wiig moment, is when they hand her that fucking pink lemonade and she sips it and she goes, ooh, that's fresh. Ooh,
yep.
God, that's good. Like she's so like, she can't even hide how delicious the pink lemonade is.
She like really wants to hate it, of course.
Yeah,
right?
She's like, God, fuck, that's good. God damn it. Oh, shit, yeah. That's fresh. It's when she says, that's fresh, that it gets me every time. Mm-hmm. So as we pull in, I think it's horses are the first sign that something's a little amiss, right? Like horses are being ridden.
You get off your car to then get on a horse.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, is that Helen's house? Is that what's implied?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I wasn't sure if it was like a country club or if it was Helen's
Where's the
house or
is that's the engagement party?
The engagement. No, the bridal.
That's the bridal shower.
Where's the engagement party?
That I think was at somebody's house. Maybe that was at Helen's house.
And then this is just like a country club. Yeah maybe it is a country club. Yeah, that makes sense, because there's that really long drive up the dirt road and you see the rabbits and the flamingos.
Like a giant mansion. It's like it looks like a mansion on the French countryside.
Which,
somewhere.
By the way, one of the things about this movie that I've always – this is something – so I'm terrible with geography. I have not clearly been to many places in our country. And when you get the opening shots of Milwaukee, I'm always like, wow, this is a really beautiful city. What is this? Like – Milwaukee, like I never knew that Milwaukee was like that, and obviously it's right there on Lake Michigan and what have you, but
Milwaukee.
But it's always so beautiful. And then in doing my research today to find out that like the whole movie was shot in LA.
Sure.
All those scenes all those movies with Chris O'Dowd on the in the car scenes and all that stuff, that's all out
like
in
Simi Valley.
That's all in Oxnard.
At the very beginning of the movie, I was like, that her and Kristen and Maya are walking down the street, walking by her old
shop,
cake shop. And I was like, that looks like the Universal backlot.
Yeah, there's definitely a backlot scene, which this movie's pretty timeless. Like, it's also the sign of a good comedy. super timeless. The one thing that always makes me kind of laugh that shows when it was made is the fact that she was like a cupcake baker. Cause like that had such a moment when this was made, when like sprinkles and crumbs were such a big deal. It's such like that to me is the perfect little touch.
But that's the thing that I think about whenever I think of Bridesmaids, and I don't know what it is. Whenever I think about it, I think about her making the one cupcake.
Yes.
And then spending all that time to then eat it.
Yep.
There's also something really great about this movie. Now, you know, you could very easily, you know, Kristen Wiig is playing a version of Kristen Wiig, probably. I bet if you're around Kristen Wiig, that's a pretty similar to her kind of natural personality. You know, a lesser confident kind of movie would just make her a comedian, a struggling comedian. But they choose subtly just to make her a struggling baker, to ground it into something, maybe a more relatable profession. And I think that really helps this movie. Whenever I watch a movie, and I know I've mentioned this to, I've mentioned to everybody, but Steve and Sarah specifically, like, it always takes me out of it if I feel like a movie is a little too industry. And this movie feels like you could just make her an actor who got fired off a pilot and she's like in a rut, but they don't. They make it, she has a bakery that's closed, and now everybody kind of feels like they can relate to the Annie character more. And it's just like little touches that.
This came out in what, 2011?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're coming out of the 2008 sort of
the recession.
And all of that. And so I remember feeling that at the time, like that was sort of a heavy, like relatable moment was in that time period.
But I also think that's a very good point, placing it in Milwaukee of all places. Like it seems so random, but it's also like to
any
to town sort of
USA
make it,
kind of a thing.
Uh-huh. 100%.
Yeah. If it's LA, it's like, okay, it's LA. Oh, they're struggling. But also we know that rent for that bakery is probably like $10,000 a month.
We'll get the walk and talk at Runyon Canyon.
Yes. You know, and like a lot of the, you know, nothing wrong. And there's a lot of amazing, like amazing industry shows. Like I can name like Master of None is a great example of a show I love where Aziz is playing a stand-up comic. There's plenty of very LA centric shows like Dave that I think are some of the best comedies on TV, but something about Bridesmaids really kind of shines through because it feels like anybody can relate to these characters. As we begin to wrap up here, when you think about Bridesmaids' influence as a whole, Sarah, like what is it you appreciate that this movie has done for actresses in comedy?
I think it's done a lot. I think that it has really paved the way for women to be able to be as raunchy and blue as men, because we are all that with our friends. But it's never sort of been allowed, quote unquote, to be depicted before. And I think this really paved the way for shows like Broad City, for shows like Chewing Gum, for the masturbation scene in Pen 15, for movies like Girls Trip. Like, I think that Bridesmaids really kind of pioneered that sort of comedy for women.
Yeah. What about you, Cisco? When you think about Bridesmaids, is this like an apex mountain for you for this era of comedy?
Yeah. And in a way that I don't think that we talk about enough or people talk about enough or recognize enough, I think, you know, it's easy to sort of like forget about how much of an impact the movie made, right? Like, unless we're doing a show like this, because, you know, even me, I think I probably watched this like once a week on HBO when I had HBO, and I'd be like scrolling through and I'd be like, oh, Bridesmaids is on, let's watch this again. You know, it's so funny. But I wasn't necessarily watching it from beginning to end and like appreciating it the way that I would if I was sitting in a theater. I can't believe it's 10 years old, you know, and that like it still
doesn't feel like it. Yeah.
At all. Feels just as funny. And again, like I've watched it a ton of times and I'm sitting here watching it and like laughing out loud as if I would have when I was watching it in the theater for the first time. Like all of this stuff still is is really relatable and funny to this day, no matter how many times you've watched it. That's a testament to the staying power and the impact that a movie like that can make, a comedy especially, you know, because a lot of comedies that, like, I'll say, like, a movie like The Hangover, right, which was like, the first time you see it, you're like, holy shit, you're dying the whole time. And then kind of like every time you watch it after that, it's like
diminishing returns.
For sure. Yep. 100%. And this one, I don't think necessarily suffers from that as much.
Well, also too, like, you know, there's a lot of those, there's a lot of movies that are from this era that probably don't, not probably, I know they don't pass the 2020 sniff test, right? Like Sarah and I, you know, we don't need to get into any specifics, but there are, I can name on my hand like three movies right off the bat that I've rewatched. I'm like, oof, man, that was really funny at the time. But boy, looking back on that, it is kind of punching down, not up. Not, it's just like, it, you know, it just doesn't quite resonate in a way. And what I think makes Bridesmaid special is that it really holds up in a really authentic way. Steve, when you, if you had to make a list, and we'll go around the horn. So we'll start with Steve, because I know we've already kind of thought about this, but like of this era, what are the three that you're throwing on at any given time that just really sing for you? Three movies.
I will, this movie.
Okay.
Step Brothers.
Yep.
God, there's so many, but it's hard because some of them I rewatch now and like, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, 40-year-old version is a good example.
Honestly, I watched Sarah Marshall quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If I had to say, probably those three.
Yep, my three are Superbad is my number one that I visit the most. I can't tell you how many times Sarah's probably walked out of her office after a long day of work. She's like, this kid's fucking watching Superbad again. Superbad, I fucking love this one. And then, although This Is the End is a little out of this range, This Is the End would probably float in there too. But yeah, Forgetting Sarah Marshall is another one of those ones that every time it's on, I just have to fucking watch it. What about you, Cisco?
I'm going to go with this one. Get Him to the Greek, actually. Get Him to the Greek. Greek is another one that, and Forgetting Sarah Marshall, they kind of go together for me. They're both so good. It's weird because all of these movies seem to be Apatow ones, but like I Love You Man is another one that I like a lot.
Same.
We
could do a whole Paul Rudd month.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. If we do a Paul Rudd month, Sarah's coming right back to be on the show.
He's always like one of the highlights of all of these.
Like Clueless, Friends. Yeah, I love Paul Rudd.
What's the one he did?
Oh man, he's amazing.
What's the one he did with Reese Witherspoon, Overnight Delivery, that Kevin Smith secretly wrote?
I don't know this one.
Oh, where he's got this, talk about dated. He's got to get to the girl where he left the drunken voicemail, kind of like the Seinfeld episode.
Oh, and delete kind of the
thing,
message.
And delete it. And it's funny. Like it's a one night road trip kind of thing with young Reese Witherspoon and him.
The exact premise of the movie Road Trip with Tom Green.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's the exact premise of that movie.
In fact, I remember thinking that then, or thinking that when Road Trip came out.
Who doesn't love the premises that could never happen now because people's phones are on them at all times and voicemails are nothing. What about you? What about you, hun? Is there one that you visit? What are the three that you visit consistently?
Are we talking strictly Apatow?
No, it could just be
three,
like
three movies that I always revisit.
I mean, I think in the vein of Bridesmaids. Yeah.
Oh, in the vein of Bridesmaids. Okay. Well, I was going to say, the three movies I revisit more than anything else are Bridesmaids, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and The Devil Wears Prada. But I don't know if Devil Wears Prada is of this era. I don't know. So I don't know that I have
It's a little too Oscar worthy.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? First of all, I was wrong the other day, Alex. Melissa McCartney was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in 2012.
Told you. Absolutely.
And Wig was nominated for screenplay also.
Yeah, they were nominated for screenplay.
All right, maybe Bridesmaids and Devil Wears Prada are in some way, they do kind of slide in. I'll take it. We'll accept it. The answer is yes, and
or
we take that.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Bridesmaids. You can just take two.
I feel like I'm trying. Well, I mean, I know you love Pen 15. That's probably a good modern example of something like this. If you're a big fan of Bridesmaids and you haven't checked out Pen 15, that's a very great kind of direction to look if you're looking for something that kind of has this cringy.
Booksmart.
Which one?
Booksmart.
Oh, Booksmart. Yeah, Booksmart is almost kind of in that super baddie range too.
Mm-hmm.
Got a great coming
or
of
even
age
like I don't know, I haven't watched it in a while, but I remember really liking it when the first time I saw it, but Trainwreck I really liked.
The Amy Schumer.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is this sort of turned into a thing, right? He did the same thing with Rogan where it was like, "Well, write something. You got anything?" And then he kind of mentored there. Wig had that cameo in Knocked Up. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That she kind of stole and he was just like, "You got anything else?" And so Annie and her, you know, wrote for years and years and years and did the whole sort of Apatow training program. And then he does it again with Trainwreck. He does it again most recently during the pandemic with Pete from SNL with King of Staten Island. And
he did Girls too Lena Dunham.
Girls as well. And it's the same thing he did with Siegel on Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So, you know, I think that we've reached the end kind of the Apatow verse in a sense. I'm glad to see that there's no plans for them to want to make a sequel.
To Bridesmaids?
To be a sequel.
No, and Wig, yeah, no. I guess Wig said something on Ellen where she was just like, the ending was perfect. We're good. You know, and there was all this stuff forever. And I watched Barb and Star. I don't know if you guys have watched Barb and Star.
Have not.
I recommend you guys doing that. Have the sister-in-law over. You know, do what you got to do and just go for a good time. It's definitely in the vein. It's definitely a ground.
Do
what you got to do because it's going to be a cult classic here in the next couple of years. It's definitely one of those movies that would play on repeat forever, starting at midnight on Comedy Central back in the day.
Okay.
It's very much, in my opinion, oddly like a throwback to like, there's moments in it. That I'm like, oh, that's very oddly, very Austin Powersy.
Oh, huh. Interesting.
Like, Wig plays a second character in it that's very, like, you could literally take the scenes and put it in Austin Powers. I was not expecting it. It's wild. It's fucking wild. It's not for everybody, but it's wild.
All right, well.
Oh, you know what? There's one, there's a Melissa McCarthy one that I don't necessarily love all of her movies that she's done, like, that she stars in, but Spy wrecked me, dude.
Rose Byrne's in
that. I remember seeing...
Yep.
Rose Byrne is in that. I remember being like almost like legit dragged to go see that movie, like by my wife at the time. She was my fiance, to go watch it with her parents. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to watch this Melissa McCarthy movie. And then we get into this movie and like 10 minutes into it, I'm like, oh, this is not what I was expecting. And then dying the entire time.
Yeah. I can say on good authority that my mother has probably watched Spy more than anybody else in the world.
So we'll have her next on the pod for Spy?
If we want to do a Melissa McCarthy month, we could put my mom in any one of our squares and she could talk about Melissa McCarthy like anybody else.
Sign me up for identity theft.
She'd talk about that too. Like, she loves Melissa McCarthy. So trust me, it runs in the family. Well, as we are wrapped up here, we have reached our hour. Sarah, if the people want to find you on the internet and support you, what are some of the things you're working on? Do the lame promotion thing, or I'll do it for you if it makes you feel gross.
Some of the things I'm working on?
Yeah, you know,
promote yourself.
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. Well, on the acting side, I've got two films coming out next year. One is called Mac and Rita, starring Diane Keaton. It is directed by Katie Asselton Duplass. And the other one is Hollywood Star Girl. It's a Disney Plus movie. It's a sequel. It's directed by Julia Mack. And it is... coming out on Disney Plus next year, starring Uma Thurman. So those are the two acting things I'm working on. The writing thing I can't talk about right now, but you can watch Twilight Zone season 2 on Paramount Plus, which I don't know that anyone has, but you could probably get a free trial. Okay, great. And you have Peacock.
I'll hand out my password.
Yeah,
in the show
you can
notes.
Get a free trial and watch episodes 1 and 4.
If you have Amazon Prime, I think you might have access to it too. Cisco, if the people want to find you at home, where can they find you?
Twitter and Instagram, Cisco Kid with 2D77.
Yo, Stove, where can the people find you?
Just look me up on Letterboxd and maybe I'll have an opinion. Maybe I won't.
You can find me on Letterboxd, but don't support me. Support all these wonderful people. Thank you so much for tuning in to BSR, and we will see you next time. Later.
Laters.
Oh, boy.
Aha, gotcha.
What's up, guys? I'm here at Pixar. I'm about to go in, start working on a collaboration project with Pixar. Just kidding, man. I don't play that soft little baby shit, man. That's Satan all day, man. Evil Satan stuff, heavy metal shit, man. I don't fuck around with a little baby shit like that.